With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Female Gaze Podcast. I'm Jessie Katz and I'm so happy because I have my little co-hostie in the studio.
Alana Rodriguez, I'm here. I'm back. I'm so excited to be back. It's been way too long. I've been a little rusty on the mic. I came back and now there's new mics here.
Yeah, that's right. We've upgraded.
Yeah, there's a candle in the middle of the table. Tim dimmed the lights for us. I'm feeling real romantic.
So, oh, are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
At 10 in the morning.
All right. It's never too early.
No.
And joining us in studio today is Lolita Cross. Hi, Lolita. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hi. Thanks for joining. Lolita is here to talk about something we haven't really addressed on the podcast, which is the visual arts. Specifically, well, we're going to talk about everything that you do. We have a lot of questions. But also, you came to us by way of The Wing, which is the women's only membership, co-working, networking organization that has locations. It started in New York and now they're blossoming all over the country and the world, honestly. And you are the art curator for The Wing.
Exactly, yeah.
I got it right? Okay, good. Yeah, so you're an art curator in general, but you also now have this position with The Wing. So you curate art that is made by female identifying artists for them, right? And the art is actually for sale that you can find at The Wing locations, which is, I actually didn't realize that until you were coming on and I read that. And I was like, oh, I never knew you could buy the artwork.
Yeah,
that's
there,
so that's good to know. Okay, so we're going to get to all of that. But first, we're going to do a round of float your boat,
toot toot,
and be in your bonnet.
Buzz, buzz, bitch.
All right. Alana, since you haven't been here in a minute, I would like for you to kick us off this week.
Ooh, okay. We're doing the boats
first. Yeah, what's your boat, baby?
Okay, so my boat this week is Obama. Okay. For a couple of reasons. Uh-huh. One of them is Barack. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are two. Barack Obama, my man.
There's more than two, actually.
There's a few.
It could be Malia.
It could have been.
Malia had a week.
What was she doing?
Making out with someone. And
what?
I saw a photo. Well, this was a while ago where she was making out with some guy at a concert. And I was like, okay.
Oh, well, this week I think it was her Facebook page was revealed to the public and she had a picture that she posted of like her kitchen and there were all these post-it notes lined up above the sink that said something about like fuck Trump, don't be complicit, da 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 da. Yeah.
Fuck it up.
So then I was like, oh my God, Malia Obama hates Donald Trump.
She has a political opinion. Crazy.
I thought she would have been a big Trump supporter.
No. Oh, yeah, you would think.
Malia MAGA. Okay, anyway. So Barack Obama
is my boat this week for a couple reasons. The one is, I'm not sure if you guys know, but he has a foundation, MBK, My Brother's Keeper, specifically for men. And they have all these speakers all the time. And it's all about really creating communities for men of color to band together. You know, it's just I could read the mission statement. We'll tweet it out, obviously, but it's amazing. So anyway, he was on a panel this week and I'll also link the article. But I really liked there was a question in the audience and someone basically asked for his definition of what being a man is and how it relates to the LGBT plus community. And he went to say, first of all, it's about being a good human. But then he also said, if you're very confident about your sexuality, you don't have to have eight women around you twerking. And I was like, Obama, you're the man. Because yes, that's so true. I just like that he is providing this opinion of what masculinity should be with and without, you know, within LGBTQ plus and outside of that. And I just love that he has this opinion and he's not afraid of sharing it. And he's also creating this amazing community of people who are of men who are open to discussing this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that I like. And then also, which is not nearly as important, but very cool that he had this bomber jacket on. And it, did you see him at the fucking basketball
girl,
game?
The Duke UNC game.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. What girl?
There's like a gorgeous woman who was not his wife next to him. And I was like, who is that? No one's talking about who that is.
Obama. No, I didn't see that. I thought Michelle was with him. But it had like the 44 on it. And it was like super cute. And it was awesome. And it wasn't even made for him. He just bought it.
Okay.
So anyway, whatever. I love him.
Dig it. That's great. Okay.
That's it.
Okay, I'll go and then we'll have you go. Okay. My boat this week is a show that I've been watching and loving called I'm Sorry. It's on True TV, but the first season is on Netflix now and it's in its second season. So just quickly, the show stars this woman, Andrea Savage, who created it and stars in it, who's this awesome comedian. She used to be in Groundlings and then she's popped up on various other shows like Veep and Episodes. And then she finally was able to write and create a vehicle for herself. In which she plays a comedic writer living in LA who's married to a dude and has a daughter. And that's kind of the whole crux of the premise of the show. But what I love about it is that she's very much a comedian in the show, meaning that every kind of scene is about her being wacky and funny and like just saying something really off the wall. And like the entire role that her husband plays is to just be in that scene with her and to be amused by her and to laugh at her and to be like the straight man to her. And I could see this actually being a little off-putting for people if they don't think that she's funny. I happen to think that she's really funny, but I just love the fact that we have a show where like a narcissistic woman comedian can just fluff her feathers, and that's the whole point of it is for her to be funny and everyone else is just there to kind of support her comedy. I mean, it is interesting, right? Because it's like, okay, so her husband, all he has to do in every scene is to just be a supporting character to her. And so if the gender roles were reversed, maybe we'd be annoyed if it was about a male comedian and his wife in every scene is just laughing at everything he says.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
But like something you and I were just talking about, Alana, before we started the episode was the idea of like reverse sexism, reverse racism. Do those things really exist? Right. So like, I think in a vacuum, maybe they do. But in the world that we live in, where things are so unequal still and women are not ever given the platform to take up all the attention in the room, it doesn't bother me that in this circumstance there's a man whose entire existence is to laugh at his wife's jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. Toot toot.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that too.
All right, Lolita, what
What's
do you
up,
got?
Lolita?
I went to Chicago recently and I feel like that's still been floating my boat.
Yeah.
I've never been there before.
Chicago.
Chicago's dope. Well, because I went there to visit a bunch of artist studios and I from the research I had done, I kind of saw that there was some cool things happening, but like meeting with all the artists, I had like 20 meetings that week, seeing them and like seeing what's being done there gave me so much hope. So that was number one. And number two, I didn't know that it was a big food city. And the food there is next level. It was incredible. Like,
I think
really, really
barbecue and pizza.
Everything.
Was there more to it?
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like fancy, fancy food that's like not even that expensive. Like people knowing, like I had wine at dinner for every meal, which like I rarely do, except if it's really good wine and really good beer and really good. Yeah, it was incredible.
Okay.
Like $3 fried chicken, just as good like really fancy meals. And like,
that's the Midwest for you.
Chicago.
Yeah, I did not know. So Chicago, go.
So you're moving to Chicago.
I'm in Chicago, I'm like looking for apartments.
The Wing, do you hear that?
Yeah, except you were just complaining about the weather in New York this morning. I don't think you can handle Chicago weather.
And also was there the day after the crazy polar vortex.
Right.
Actually,
oh
my flight was pushed back. But I was kind of, I was like, this is so crazy. Like the fact that I get to experience this is like pretty amazing.
It's like going to Antarctica.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, it's cool if I don't have to live here every day.
Yeah,
I think Chicago is probably the best that the Midwest has to offer. I'm allowed to say that because I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Ohio. And you know, we have great cities in Ohio too, but Chicago is like the New York of the Midwest or the whatever.
Chicago's rad. I love Chicago. Were you there specifically for female?
I was visiting a female identifying artist.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What about the art there was different than here?
Paintings, tons of paintings. It was nice to see that. Whenever I hear people saying painting is dead, it's like a thing to say apparently. I completely disagree and I tell people to go to Chicago.
What's the predominant medium here in New York?
I think it's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Most people
multimedia
in New York come from different cities, so I feel like they kind of bring that luggage with them. But there it's like they go to school for painting most of the time. Like the Arts of Chicago is very painting heavy. You go to the museum there, it's like all the biggest masterpieces, so I think a lot of people are inspired by it.
But
painting
God,
heavy.
You have a cool job.
I was just thinking that. I was like, fuck, this episode episode like, is going to give me a complex 100%. That I did everything wrong in my life. Because yeah. I love your job.
I'm
your
about
so
to go
far.
Back to my office and beep, boop, bop, ba-doop on my fucking computer.
Okay, right. B.
Yes, what's your B?
Okay, well, so I know Jesse already kind of touched on this in the previous episode, but Jesse Smollett, the you're my B, man.
Well, now we have updates.
Now we have
updates.
So, yeah, just for everyone who is unaware, well, I don't think you would ever be unaware, but just a brief update is news came out that Jesse did, in fact, make up the fact that he was the victim of
a hate crime.
A hate crime, yeah. So he paid $3,500 to get two guys to do what he says he did.
And wrote them a check, right?
Wrote them a check. Idiot.
I know.
I'm just like, bro, it pisses me off because
every
like,
part of it is embarrassing.
Every part of it is embarrassing, but also like a hate crime, like those are actual things that happen.
I know.
And the more that you're the boy that cries wolf,
right.
the less that people are going to put value in the victims who are actually victims of hate crimes.
Yeah, so
that bothers me. And for what, bro?
Totally.
Because you weren't getting a big enough check on Empire? Yeah. For what?
Right. So when we talked about this on the last episode, we were kind of getting live updates while we were talking about it that it looked like maybe the whole thing was a hoax. So what I said then, which I just want to reiterate now, is that regardless of what happened with Jussie Smollett, the point is hate crimes have been on the rise in the U.S. in the last couple of years.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is legit. It happens to non-celebrities every day in this country.
Yep.
So let's just remember that this was a weird anomaly, and because it was a famous person, it's all that we're talking about.
Right.
But there's underreported hate crimes happening constantly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, Trump, of course, tweeted about it immediately and is going to take this all the way through the election as proof that MAGA is great. And the liberals are evil.
Right.
So let's keep our eye on the prize.
Yeah, if there's one micro positive is that he put, you know, a voice or a face, a celebrity face to something that's happening, like you said, under. But
yeah, if people remember to frame it
that
way.
Well, exactly. And I doubt that they will. I'm just trying to find like, you know, the
silver lining.
Silver lining here. But it's just, I'm bummed. It's a huge fucking bummer. It sucks.
I agree. That's a good B.
Yeah.
All right. My B this week. So I predicted this one might be my B months ago, I think. I said that if Bernie Sanders declared his candidacy for 2020, he would be my B every week until the election. So he did declare, and listen, I know this is a controversial B because I know a lot of our listeners are Bernie supporters. And like, respect, you know, I think all of the candidates in the Democratic Party would be better and would save us from this hellhole that we find ourselves in this country. Mm-hmm. So this week, I'll just pinpoint something that Bernie said that particularly pissed me off, which is he said he thinks that the candidates this year should be looked at regardless of their gender or their race or their age, which was really what he was talking about. He's saying, you know, don't come after me for
being I'm a million years
almost
old.
80 by the time I'll be in the White House. Right.
Jesus.
But for a white man to say, don't look at candidates' gender or race is actually fucked up to me because I think those things can be incredible assets. And when I look at all of the women that are running in the Democratic Party this year, I'm so heartened by that. And, you know, and Kamala Harris is a woman of color. And I think there's so much that you can bring to the table being a not old white man, you know, that I just think it's like, he's just so tone deaf. He's missing the whole fucking point when he says something like that.
And also, I think he's saying what he thinks the public wants to hear. Like, that's such an old say, you know, let's regardless of age, gender, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just such an archaic, in my opinion, expression.
Yeah.
That he's just saying it to, I think, to be more, quote, open. Right?
Right.
But like, let's actually get to the point. I honestly, I'm agreeing with your B this week.
Okay.
I agree. It is very controversial.
Yes.
Because Bernie is great.
Uh-huh.
The issue that I have and the reason why I'm siding with you, my sister, this week is because I don't want the votes to be split the way they were when Hillary was running.
Okay.
You know, like.
Right. Well, but so just to be clear, he didn't split the votes because Hillary became the candidate and ran against Trump. But what I do think he did is he stayed in the race for so long trying to tear her down that he weakened her as a candidate.
Right.
So by the time she was in the general election,
she was a goner.
She was tarnished for many reasons, but he definitely didn't help.
Yeah.
And it was my opinion is that it was arrogance that kept him in the race longer than he should have been. And it feels like arrogance to me again that he's running again, because we have so many other candidates that
incredible
are
candidates.
New and could bring some fresh blood into our yeah. political system.
Yeah. Okay. I'm down with you. I'm down.
Anyway, so the non-American in the
group. Lolita!
We won't put you on record about Bernie Sanders. What's your beat this week?
I have a couple, but I'll probably stick
Let's
to...
Let's talk about all of them.
Let's talk about... Okay, all right.
Please. People always have more Bs than both. Yeah. I'm really sad for this thing.
I know. Angry people.
It's not... Well, I have right. tons of good things, but there was one ad in the subway that I was telling my boyfriend about. He was like, no one cares, but I care, and I think it's funny. It's like basically, I think it's actually pretty messed up, and no one talks about it. And I think it's like so messed up because it's so old school. But there's like two ads that are like next to each other. One is like 1-800 bankruptcy, and the other one is 1-800 diamonds or something. And it's one is basically targeted to men, being like, when you go bankrupt, and the one right next to it is when your husband goes bankrupt, diamonds aren't forever, like get a divorce. Oh, the other one is 1-800 divorce.
What?
So basically it's like targeted, and it's like the head. I don't know if you guys haven't seen this.
No,
because you haven't paid attention, because it looks so ghetto. It's so old, and one looks at it except for me, and it's in every subway station. It's like
now
in all
I'm gonna
the
keep my eyes peeled.
It's so insane. It's like a hot, like, you know, like a manicured hand with like a big diamond on it. It says like 1-800 divorce, and the one next to it is like bankruptcy.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah, that one is. I think it's just funny that no one talks about it, because I think it's so like out there, like sexist, old school.
All of it,
right?
It's insane.
So the divorce ad is for a law firm?
No, it's basically like both are published by law firms. Like both are like ads for law firms, and in one case you can get like a attorney in case you're getting bankrupt, and the other one you're getting an attorney in case you're getting divorced. But both are like placed in such ways that you kind of assume that like once that guy goes bankrupt, that chick is getting divorced.
Get out of
exactly.
there. Get out of there.
She has that rock.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, she's like, how do I cash out of that rock?
Yeah, what the fuck?
The subliminal messaging. It's,
yo.
Man, it's scary. It's scary.
Yo.
It also makes
that.
Me think, though, I've been having this, well, I'm always having this debate with myself and with my friends about like the importance or value of dating someone who does have a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Because like myself and a lot of my friends are like creative types that have never been on some lucrative career path. And so we're always like, God, it would be so nice to partner with someone who had a lot of money, just so it would like take a little bit of that edge off of this uncertain future that we all have. But then we all are just hopelessly attracted to other poor people.
100%. So, I love poor people.
Yeah. But sometimes I wish I was that woman who married a man for his diamonds and then divorced him and kept the diamonds.
And had a pill problem and drank Pinot Grigio every night. Mm. Yeah, you know.
Doesn't that sound nice?
We all have our strengths.
Right.
So what else? You got another B up your sleeve? What's up?
Well, the other one that is just like a kind of a constant one is just the lack of representation of women in the arts. You know, that's kind of like overall
that's
in general,
a perpetual
like,
bee.
And I think it is changing, but I was doing a panel in San Francisco with four of the artists that we have out there, and they were all great, and they were all talking about basically how it was just a reminder that there's no women in museums and no women of colors, and it's just, I mean, there are some, but it's, you know, work in progress.
Yeah.
We're not there yet. And people still associate me with like working with female artists instead of saying I just work with artists.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which is a constant reminder that like male artists are just artists and female artists are female artists.
Right. So. Were you moderating that panel?
Yeah.
Do you find that women artists are tired of talking about this?
Yeah, I think some of them are. I went to another panel that was like most like, you know, feminist artists from the 70s before, some of which are featured in The Wing. And they were, you know, they were more vocal about it because they have been feminist artists. Like they were talking about how, like, you know, they were from that generation and it's like part of their work. But some artists make work about architecture and they don't want to be reminded that they're women all the time. Like people ask me all the time if I work with feminist artists, and I tell them some of them are, but not of them, you know, not all of them are. Like I think there are some women who make work about like global warming. I don't know, but different things. Like men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I have a lot I want to ask you kind of in that same vein. So let's just take a quick break, but we will be right back with Lolita to talk visual art and the female gaze.
Hold up. I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so this is something that I really wanted to pick your brain about because I honestly don't know how I feel about it or how I would begin to approach this topic, which is the idea of the female gaze in visual art and what does that mean exactly, unless you're talking about, for example, photographs of women or photographs of people or paintings of people. But if you are talking about anything that's more abstract or expressionist, what does the female gaze mean? Does that even exist? I mean, it's we've generally decided on this podcast it's not enough that something is made by a female identifying artist because they can still perpetuate the male gaze. So it's not just that women are creating these things. So then what does it mean? Does it mean anything?
The female gaze when women are basically creating that gaze?
Yeah. But like, so if you, like you mentioned an artist who depicts architecture, right? So could you see the female gaze in art like that? What
like
does
a
that
female
even mean?
Approach? I mean, I don't think so. You know, there are some artists where you can definitely tell it was made by a woman.
Like what's an example?
I think it's more about the personality. I think it's more about the personality. Like there are some pieces that only a woman would think about when making art, you know, like maybe looking more about like introverted, like looking at how they're feeling that day and how that's affecting their painting. Maybe thinking more about just things that in general male artists are less aware of. I think women have an aspect to them that's very aware of their own body, of their surroundings, of their environment. So I think that in that way gets reflected in the work.
And that's something that you feel like you can identify in a work of art without knowing the context of why it was created?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. However, if somebody were to be like, oh, it's actually a guy who made that, then I would be like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I wonder what his approach is. Like, with art, that's the thing that's super important with art to keep in mind is that everything is about context. So you can have like a piece that looks exactly the same, but the context of how it was made and like what the intention is behind it will change your entire vision of it. So in that way, if a woman makes something, yes, it adds in a certain way. However, certain pieces are so not about that. In that way, the female gaze is completely out of it. Or just like not the female gaze, because a gaze is something completely different, but like the female touch is completely removed from it.
That's so interesting. I mean, I don't know if we've really gotten into this on the podcast yet, but I do think that a man can also utilize the female gaze. Like when you described it maybe as being something that's more introspective, for example, right? Like a man can certainly work with introspection.
Sure. Yeah. And I actually was watching a documentary recently. It was a British one. And one of the episodes was talking about how even though you are a male or a female identifying physically, your brains can be the opposite gender. So they did a bunch of tests where they put groups of men and women together and they had them do certain tasks. And apparently if you have a more male skewing brain or female skewing brain, you'll do those tasks differently. And so at the end, they did a lineup and they were like, these men actually had a more female skewing brain. They
what
did
does that
everything.
Mean,
so
female skewing brain.
I'm going to have to look this up because I'm not as informed, but it was like certain traits that women would do or certain ways like women are supposed to be more tactical in X, Y, and Z and men are supposed to in PQ and whatever.
So meaning even like using me as an example, I'm female identifying.
But you could have a masculine
brain.
But
I could still have a male skewing brain.
So let's say so let's say you're creating a work of art. Perhaps your art isn't even female gaze at all because your brain is wired
more
masculine.
I'm going to have an identity crisis after this.
Right. So I'm curious.
Is there a way to test this?
Yeah, there is.
Can I go get a test?
Okay. I'm going to look all this up for you guys because I think it's pretty fascinating because like you said, to your point, a man could create a work of art that is incredibly female gazey.
Right.
Yeah. And for, you know, maybe it's just their brain.
Yeah.
I would be curious to see two pieces of the same, you know, like let's say we get two architects and we say draw a blueprint of the same thing and see if someone, you know, with your experience could identify who did what.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
So yeah. I want to work backwards to how you started doing this, but just to kind of stay in the present for a second. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about something that I read that you said, because you've done a few interviews. you're a person who gets interviewed. No, it's just interesting. It was something about when you were approached to work for The Wing mm-hmm. and to curate this art by female identifying artists. And you said that at first it seemed like a restriction because you mm-hmm. would have to look past artists that mm-hmm. you would normally be interested in curating. And then somehow it opened up for you mm-hmm. and you decided to do it. So can you just like tell us about that?
Yeah, it's kind of like I was thinking about it this morning, actually. There is something about a rule when you're applied a rule, like mm-hmm. when you apply certain how you call that? What's another word for role? Like certain
restrictions
exactly. Yeah. You directly think about all the things you can't do.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Like, you know, you tell a kid, don't touch that plug. The first thing you're going to do is wanting to touch it because they're just like, oh, I want to know what's out there. Right. So the first thing I was like, oh, I can't use this and this and this and this person.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Alana, I feel like that describes
literally
it.
That's, I was just thinking, I have a scar on my finger because my mom literally said, don't touch that plug. And I did when I was a kid and I electrocuted myself. So yeah, oh, you're right.
Jesus Christ.
You're right. Keep going.
But yeah, so you have that first, like, you know, reflex at first. And also, you know, working with shows before, I mm-hmm. every single time I did a group show, I never really thought about gender. And I always ended up naturally with 50-50, mm-hmm. like male, female. And
right.
I never really thought about it. So I worked with pretty much both at all times.
Uh-huh.
And I had just been working with like a couple male artists who were talented and I was excited to be showing them. Anyway, so I had that. And then the second thing is that I was thinking about female artists. And when you think about female artists, the first people who come to mind are like Frida Kahlo,
right.
Georgia O'Keeffe,
right.
and like basically like
that's
two
it.
Or three like super famous female artists. And you're like, oh, all the other ones, like, I don't know who they are. Like, they're not famous.
Uh-huh.
And then you think back about like the papers you wrote in college and like those artists that you connected with that you just didn't think about the fact that they were female or male, that you just thought about their art. And so my brain kind of switched and I went into my old self of just looking at art and then remembering that like half of the art I like is made by female identifying artists. And so that's how I kind of went back to it.
Okay, because if you were already curating shows that were 50-50 male female, mm-hmm. that means you made an intentional effort to include women because it's not 50-50 in the marketplace, I'm assuming.
It's not, but I think it's just because I was surrounded by both female and male artists because I went to school in a liberal arts school.
Okay.
So I was surrounded by people who went to the school with the same chances. And then
right.
when they left school, they didn't get the same chances. But
right.
at first, everybody studied the same thing. You know, the classes
yeah.
were 50-50. It's
yeah.
just like when they get out, you don't get that same split.
Yeah, welcome to
yeah.
the real world.
So then when you started doing this for The Wing, did it feel gratifying?
Yeah. I mean, the first, like, it's funny once you open that door of, like, the amount of artists that you are... that you're allowed to work with. It's like some kind of like gold card where you can literally like go up to anybody being like, hey, would you want to be part of this exciting project? And they say yes. And you say, oh my God, I did not expect them to say yes, but dope.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
And then like people just keep saying yes. And the more you talk, I mean, I'm sure you guys get that with like interviewing people all the time, but the more you talk to artists and to people in general, the more you find connection in each of them. And the more you're like, oh, you should meet this person, that person.
Totally.
And you do that with art. So it's amazing to be like, wow, you guys might not meet each other this year, but your art will be hanging out next to each other. And like when I'll be walking through collectors or just people in general who want to learn more about art, I can tell them like, you know what's cool, this artist was, you know, obsessed with this artist growing up and they're in the same room now. Like, how cool is that?
That's crazy.
So that's super gratifying. It's seeing also people who are not necessarily versed in the art world appreciate art for what it is instead of thinking like, oh, I don't know, like I didn't study art history, like
right.
I don't really want to go for it. That's also amazing. So there's like every aspect of my job is exciting because everyone ends up being stimulated in different ways. So that's really, it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also a filmmaker and I've been trying to work with an exclusively female or non-binary identifying crew. And it is harder to find those people because they're given fewer opportunities to hold a camera or do lighting or whatever. But then when you do put in the effort, you will find them. And then it's incredibly gratifying to be able to uplift and to showcase the amazing talents of people who don't really get the chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you... have any moment, because I think some people struggle with this about the wing in general, and this kind of goes back to the idea of, is there such thing as reverse sexism? Mm-hmm. Of like, well, what is the value really in having women only space and women only artists? And like, is this like an act of exclusion? And
I, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've thought about it, because before, when I was told there was women only shows, I was like, women don't need to be shown only with women. I need to be shown with like Richard Serra, like with you know, other male. And then I had the reverse effect, because I realized that by only showing female artists, they just become artists. Like all of a sudden, they're not exclusive. So you don't need to be like, oh, she's actually a female artist. How exciting is that? You're like, no, they're just artists.
Yeah.
And so your brain, instead of our brain always thinking he, when you talk about an artist, my brain just thinks she. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty interesting switch to be like, oh, I don't have to think about them as like only being female. And now when I have clients from, you know, outside of the wing, anybody who reaches out to me being like, oh, I want to like buy art, I don't know who to buy, I need something for my wall, I need to invest my money, I need blah blah blah, the first like, I don't know, like 20 artists I'm going to send them are going to be female, just because that's all that's on my brain, you know. So like, it is giving more opportunity to women at the end of the day to have that kind of platform. I'm not excluding men, I'm still including like, you know, two or three male artists I've been working with, but it's mostly female, because that's who I've been working with, that's who I know, that's who I can tell you like, yeah, she's gonna do great, she's going in that direction. Like, you know, everybody is like evolving with it. But
so you're talking about work you're doing outside of the wing?
Well, no, but so basically when a client comes to me and be like, I wanna buy art, I work with like, I don't know, like 50 plus artists these days that are all shown across, you know, across the States. And these are all like female identifying artists. So my work, all the pieces are for sale, extends to outside of the wing as well.
Sure. Can you, I'm suddenly realizing I don't really understand how your job works.
Yeah.
How this profession works, right, or this art world. Do these artists only work with you?
No.
Okay.
No. They don't work with me. Basically, I am, I guess another way of understanding it better is that if I was their agent.
Right.
So it's a little bit of like, in the walls of the wing, I'm their agent. For those who do not have a gallery. Other artists that I show are famous and they have galleries and they have their own agents. Like, they're good. So in that case, when I consign their pieces, meaning when they're like loaned to me and then I like put them on the space and they're for sale, I'm in touch with their gallery, and like their gallery and I are kind of like partnering to like, you know, sell a piece.
Okay.
So if they have clients that's interested by a piece that's in the wing, I talk to them. I, you know, led their people into the space to look at the piece and then talk to them about it, etc.
So just quickly going back, because I'm not sure if I'm totally clear, but the wing doesn't mandate that you only bring in female identifying art.
They do.
Or they do.
They do. They do.
Is there a world where the other gaze is accepted, such as trans, non-binary?
Is it just
non-male?
Yeah, it's non-male. It's basically what it is. We have trans artists.
But trans men.
I've spoken to a trans artist who didn't identify with either. And that wasn't a problem with the wing at all. Like, I don't think they would care at all.
Yeah.
But what the artist didn't feel comfortable being put in a case of female identifying, because they didn't feel female identifying.
How do you, when you're curating these different pieces of art, what's your process like? Is there a theme, or is it just a time, or the people that you're in contact with? How, like, what's that whole process? How do you get that together?
Tell us about these dates that you go on studio visits.
Yes.
So basically, when I know we're going to open into a city, I do research on the city. I do research on the art scene, going from like articles about like the cool artists, or just like anything of like, you know, there's always articles about like the top 10 things you should look up.
Yeah.
So I look at press for artists, and then I look at a residency program, because that's the gold mine to finding good artists. Like, they always, you know, in like, you can go to one spot and there's like 20 studios and you can just do like one after the other. And then looking at galleries also, because they kind of dictate what it is, and they have artists that are interesting, and I always want to meet with galleries in general, because they do an incredible job at working with artists, supporting them and selling them. So it's always important for me to include them in the process as well.
So an artist must have already passed through some initial threshold for you to discover them, it sounds like.
Yeah, or Instagram also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I discover a lot of artists on Instagram, but usually it's hard to like locate them.
Sure.
Yeah. So I usually have like, you know, that save option on Instagram, and I go back every time we open to a new city to see if any of them are in the city.
Oh, cool.
Most of them are like, you know, either like all over the place or they're like in LA or New York. So yeah, that's a process. And then when I get there, I start schedule. Well, I schedule all the studio visits before going there, seeing if they're interested in the concept. Because some people are like, "Oh, I don't know. I sell my pieces. I don't loan them for a year." And then when I meet with them, what's important for me is to have a conversation about what they do. I always tell them, what's your background? Where did you come from? Like, how did you become an artist? Like,
I was wondering how much of it is you evaluating their art and you connecting with them as a
connecting
person.
With them. I don't need to connect with them, but I need to connect with why they're artists. Like, I've had some artists being like, oh, my background was in, I don't know, in like politics. And then like, well, not politics, is already like engaged in art. Like, my background is in like economics, and I just like really love paintings on Sundays, so I just paint on Sundays. I'm like, okay, well, maybe not, you know.
Yeah,
totally.
So that's what I mean by background. It's like, why, like, what's your drive, and do you have one? You know, some artists are very happy just like painting on Sundays and not doing anything else. Other artists, like, you know, have a game plan and they want to show places and they're excited, and therefore they're kind of aware of the market as well. They can place themselves in the market, or in general, in like in a conversation, in some kind of conversation. So these are important for me as well. Yeah. And then some artists, you know, every artist has like a different way of connecting with their work. And it's important for me to make sure that I can. I feel like a good artist is somebody who can summarize in one sentence what they do. And yeah, when they're very concise about what they do, and if you connect with them directly. Is just exciting, and you want to like share that story with the clients you're going to be selling the pieces to. So that's kind of my process. It's basically like, if the conversation is good for an hour, and we have, you have like work that I know my client would also like, you know, there's some pieces that are, that I loved, but they're like too complicated in terms of installation. So, you know, I also have to think about the spaces I'm going to be showing them into. You know, it is a co-working space. It's not, I don't want people to get confused if it's art or if it's not, you know. So when it's too conceptual, I can put it there, but it doesn't matter, because, you know, I can always do like a solo show with them, or like, you know, something outside of the wing.
It's also so helpful to have those conversations, I feel, because you are the one that is going to be there talking and educating people
as well.
If there's not like a good story, or if you're not, you know, into it, it's going to be harder to sell.
I can't sell something I'm not passionate about.
Exactly.
What is the exact challenge for women artists in the marketplace? What's happening? What's the problem?
You know, I think for a very long time, because their price was so low, people thought that it was because they were cheap. Like, because they were just like, oh, if it's cheap, it must not be good. And now they're finally understanding that is because they were undervalued.
Yeah.
And that's changing people's minds.
That's so interesting. So this organization called Ladies Get Paid, we're going to have the founders on the show soon. We heard one of them, Claire, talk about this at the Wing, actually, at a talk they did there. And she and a few other women she was speaking with were talking about how when you're negotiating for a salary at work, that we fall into this trap of thinking if we ask for a smaller amount of money, then we're more likely to get it. And to, you know, but they were saying, you know, people associate quality with a price tag. So if you're selling yourself for cheap, they're going to think you're probably not worth that much. Sometimes if you ask for more money, they're like, oh, they must be worth a lot because they have a higher price tag. So it makes sense that it's the same in the art world.
It is. I mean, the art world is made on money. I mean, those prices are completely made up. You know, and they change all the time. They're stupid for, I mean, you know, if you're, we're being honest about it, like, it's stupid to spend millions on artwork. It's something you put above your couch, you know? The only thing is that it's all about, you know, it's like stocks. It's like,
it's all about it's an investment.
It's an investment. It's about marketplace. It's about like putting yourself, it's like a handbag, you know? Like, you're putting yourself in a marketplace and you're matching it, or, you know, are you cheaper or more expensive than another artist?
So how did you go from being, were you an art history major, right? At Bard. How did you go from that, which is, you know, a fairly common liberal arts degree and, you know, a kind of liberal arts college like a lot of us went to where we learned useless things. And then in a pretty short amount of time, you've turned this into a very fascinating and healthy career. And it seems like you understand a lot about the marketplace And I'm sure they weren't really teaching that at Bard.
No, I think that's something that kind of comes with experience. It's like a lot of it. But basically, I was studying art history and I just loved studying about it. I just thought it was so interesting to see how someone's brain could work and how they could create something. And
are you an artist yourself?
I was
not at all. I think that's exactly why, is because I look at artists like they're aliens and they're geniuses. And I'm like, wow, I could never do what you do. I have so much respect for them. But basically, I just saw the amount of amazing artists that have been producing works for the past, you know, thousands of years. And I was just like, wow, that's so cool. Like, huh, wonder if like the people surrounding me in like photo programs and like film programs and studio arts program are doing cool things that maybe one day I'll be learning about in school. And so I started doing studio visits with my peers. And then from
just
that,
on campus.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And I found that a lot of the conversations I was having were like just as exciting as the ones I was having in class. And I was just like, okay, well, maybe I can do a show with them and maybe I can see how that works. So I did my first show when I was in college. And then after, I was like, well, okay, it's easier to do a show in college. Like, you know, you find an empty apartment, you put art there, you have your friends come. Like, maybe I'll challenge myself. And before I graduate, I'll do a show in New York. Wow. So I did a show in New York with a couple of friends. It was like a benefit for the victims of Sandy. It was right after the hurricane happened.
Oh, wow. And so, and what kind of space did you do this in?
I did it in a Chinese restaurant.
Obsessed with that. That's awesome.
I really wanted it to be a little bit funky. And I always think about my friends and my parents and my family and how they're not well versed in art, and they're, you know, they kind of like think of art as like, okay, well, it's like an ordeal. We have to like go see an exhibition, is what people do. So I want to make it as accessible as possible. And having it in a Chinese restaurant that was one night only, so people could have fun, they could drink. It was like, you know, the space is very kitschy. We had basically turned it around. And it was also a really good way for me to ask my friends who I thought were talented on top of like famous artists who were talented but were also just more famous. So I knew that people in New York would want to come to the space because of all the famous art, and be like, oh, maybe I can buy a famous art piece and maybe I can see a famous artist. But then really walk out with like having paid three times the estimated price for a 19-year-old artist that was dope.
That
was pretty cool to be like, okay, well, people will basically sell, people will basically buy what's good and be smart about it if they're well educated.
Yeah, it's awesome that you're putting a fresh spin on what an exhibition could look like, because even there, you know, you said your parents, they might be like, oh, that's, we have to do this, but also there's a lot of younger kids out there who just feel like maybe they're not well versed enough to be in a space like that.
Everybody
super uncomfortable, right?
Literally
even
everybody.
Adults
literally everyone.
I don't think I have a single friend who feels confident about art.
So my sister was an art history major. She actually studied abroad in French, speaks French. She's very, but her, the way that she looks at everything is so unlike anything I'm used to. Like she could look at this microphone and appreciate the art about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if she's going
but
to an
exhibition,
but you
don't have to have that kind of brain.
No, you
that's
don't.
The thing. We've
not
made
at all.
Up this barrier about
Totally.
Exactly. Totally. I always tell people, I think for some reason, like us humans have such a like organic relationship with music, with movies, with books. We laugh, we cry, we listen to all of them with so much joy. But for some reason, the fine art thing is such a blockage. It's like people think of it as like, oh, I don't know. It's like I'm supposed to like picture like the end of the world while looking at this like white piece of canvas. Yeah. I'm like, oh, no, you can just roll your eyes and be like, I don't like that, but I like this one over there because it's funny. It makes me laugh.
And I think that's the beauty of art. There are no rules. And people, especially now, feel confined to have rules and like, what am I supposed to feel when I'm looking at this? And why, you know, like just fucking feel. And if you don't like it, bye.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It took me until literally this year to be able to admit to anyone that I don't really love Jackson Pollock. I don't feel anything when I look at those.
And you
I felt
big
shame about
painting.
It my
yeah,
whole
big,
fucking
big bloody
life.
Jizz.
it's so stupid.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Listen, I still have to struggle. It's still sometimes I'm just like, I don't really like that artist. Yeah. Nobody likes it.
Right.
You're like, I don't fucking get it.
It's all subjective. Yeah. It's fine.
Art's cool.
There's enough for everybody.
Exactly.
I also read something about you that I thought was interesting that I wanted to ask you about, which is that you're big into meditation.
I am, although I've been very bad these past few weeks.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to ask you, because I read that you do it twice a day.
Yeah, I was doing it twice a day when I said it.
Okay, because I study transcendental meditation, which is twice a day. I don't know if that's particularly what you practice.
I think so.
But my practice is terrible. I'm lucky if I do once a day. I did, you were talking about how it's actually just this amazing practice in restfulness and is like better than a nap, which I often use it for, which doesn't sound very profound.
No,
it's but honestly,
true.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Because we're tired all of the fucking time. Mm-hmm. We're running around like rats, especially if you live in a place like New York. And to have this practice where if you can just find a place to go, or even I can do it on the subway now, you know, just find 20 minutes, close your eyes and do your thing can be extremely recharging.
Yeah.
And it's like crucial to my life now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I could do it twice a day, it would be even more crucial.
Yeah.
I know.
It's hard.
It's you just have to be tough on yourself. And also thinking like 20 minutes sounds like a lot. And then you remember what you did the last 20 minutes. You've been looking at your phone.
You're on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, when you look at your fucking screen time report that pops up now and makes you want
to
die.
Don't even talk to me about it. I need to be better at meditating because I have a very ADD mind and I need to quiet it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll maybe meditate once a week, but I should be doing it. We all should be meditating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just my general.
They teach it to kids now.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. There's some schools that do. I think my nephews and nieces go to school that does
kids are mad bougie these days.
I know.
Remember when we were kids? My mom was like, here's a cardboard box. Go play.
Yeah. No, but because it's been proven to be scientifically beneficial to a human being. So
it's also
like,
free. I mean.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Free. We don't give our schools any budget in the U.S.
Yeah.
But you can teach free meditation. Yeah. Exactly.
Forget the parachute game. Just go sit.
Yeah. Oh, the parachute game.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, so good. Never forget that.
No.
Okay, Lolita, question. If someone who's listening is like, you know what, this has inspired me and I would really love to buy a piece of art by any artist, but in particular, like an awesome female identifying artist, what's the first step? Where the hell do you look?
First step is reaching out to me.
Okay, boom.
And then if I'm in New York, I'll give them a tour of the art. I'll show them a little bit what there is on the walls.
Okay.
If not, I can talk to them on the phone. Or usually what I started doing when people have some kind of interest about an artist that they know nothing about, I usually will attach more than like the price information, but also attach a little bio so that I can learn about the artist and see if at least it connects with them.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I mean, it's intimidating at first. Everybody's first piece is a little bit scary. And then once they get into it, they're just like, oh, this is actually not that crazy. And like, you know, I still could pay my rent even though I, you know, spend $500 on an artwork.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a mind game, but it's clicking. And once it clicks, it's fully on. So first step is usually to just like reach out to me, honestly.
Where can people find you?
They can find me on my website. It's www.lolitacross.com. On Instagram, it's
LOLITACROS.
S as in Sam, yeah.
Right.
Only one S,
one
please.
One S,
And then Instagram also, if you look up Lolita Cross, you'll find my filled with a beautiful artist Instagram page. Yeah, all the pieces are listed on my website, so you can also like scroll through it, see what you like, and then like honestly, I can give you a tour of the wing whenever. Like if you, I'm sure if you like, I'm there.
Can you
almost
do it
every
if you're
day.
A non-member?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
People have
that.
Like guests and stuff, so cool. I just like bring them as my guests and show them the space.
Oh, cool.
So a lot of them end up joining the wing at the end. So it's
I bet.
What cities are the wing? Is the wing in right now?
Right now. New York, 3 locations, 1 in Brooklyn, 2 in Manhattan, DC, San Francisco, and opening very soon in other locations.
Yay.
Chicago,
Seattle.
LA.
Where are you traveling to next for those who aren't in New York?
LA.
Yeah. And when are you going to be in LA?
I don't know yet because the date hasn't been confirmed. But
put you in the hot
soon.
Seat. Where are you going? What are the dates? What time?
Where can people stalk you?
When we know, we'll let you guys know.
And what else do you have coming up outside of the wing?
So I've been working. I basically have an Instagram series called Studio Visits of the Day, which started very organically just because I was going to people's studio visits. And I was like, you know, people should probably know that I'm seeing all those great artists. So I started taking their photos in their studios and people really liked that and discovered artists and bought artists through those visits. And so I was like, you know, maybe I could have a little bit of an experience for a close group of people, of collectors and of just like creative souls who I know would like this specific artist. And so I would bring them to their studio and then have a film crew, like film everything so that then that film can live for like a wider audience. And so I'm doing one on the 26th of February with Erin O'Keefe, who is one of the artists that we have in DC, who's really, really great. And I went to her studio, and to understand her work, you really have to listen to her talk about it and also seeing her studio, because she's got like a studio within a studio. Uh-huh. And it's pretty amazing to see that. So and there's so many art, like so many either artists or collectors or just like interior designers who I know like her work that I really wanted them to see her. So I'm excited to have them all in one room to like kind of connect with her and exchange. And yeah, and then that video will live on my Instagram's first studio visit of the month.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Why are you in the U.S.?
When
I have to ask.
Why are you here?
Like, good as question. Opposed to any other place or France or...
I went to high school here.
Okay.
So I got here. I was 16 years old. I had the two best years of my life in high school. I had all my friends here. And then by the time I was 18, I was like, well, I'm going to go to school here because my life is in New York now.
Okay.
So I went to Bard.
Okay. So at this point, it feels like home.
Yeah, yeah. This is definitely... I have like two friends living in France.
Got it.
And even my family is like across the world. Like, I don't even have like...
Yeah, yeah.
That much of like bond to friends,
right?
Except emotional, obviously.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, honestly, the reason why I asked it, which is, it sounded like a stupid question, but it's because I'm just interested professionally why you would choose to be here as opposed to.
It was just natural. Oh, yeah. Well, especially I went to
or
so
to
since
stay
I
here.
Went to school here. Yeah, it was just kind of like, well, I'm staying.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to school here, which in France would be like, I mean, I think I would probably have to like. Take an equivalent test or something. I don't think my diploma brings anything to French workers. So I would probably have to like re-go back to school or something.
Huh.
And on top of it, I was always told that if you study art history in France, you're going to be a, you know, high school teacher. Like there's no career for studying art history. People go to school for business, to do business. They go to school for, you know, management, to be a manager. It's like very, very like, you know, by the book. And when you're 16 years old, not even, when you're like 13 years old, you're like already asked to like make certain choices for like your future self.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I remember taking art history like classes when I was in France and being like, wow, this is so fun. But I just knew that I couldn't make a job out of it. And then when I moved to New York, I was like, oh, you know what? I might just try that.
Yeah.
Because in New York, I knew plenty of people. Like this, the father of my best friend studied art history. And now he's like, a perfume guy, like he has like a business in perfume, and it has nothing to do with it.
You know,
it's like, oh, you can do whatever you want. You can just have fun for 4 years and then graduate and like do something else.
Totally. Yeah. I was just talking to an Italian friend of mine who still lives in Europe, and he was like, it's really hard to become an artist in Italy now because from the second you're born, everyone tells you, we've already had Michelangelo. We don't need you. Like, we've already done the greatest art that will ever be done on this earth. And there's just so little support or sense of like,
that's
you
so
too
silly.
Could grow up to be an amazing artist. They're so focused on the history of
it. Yeah, that's very European. In France, I feel like it's very similar. Although there are some really good artists and new infrastructures for artists that I've seen popping up in Paris. So,
yeah,
I'm going to check it out next time I'm there.
Oh, there you go. All right, so before we let you go, will you do a round of the hot takes wheel with us?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I'm scared.
I love
you should
wheel.
Be.
Okay, so the rule with the wheel is you spin it. And it's still janky as fuck. We really need a better wheel. Spin it, and then whatever topic we land on, we just have like a quick fire debate about it.
Okay.
Just your immediate thoughts.
I mean, it's not always debate. It's literally falling apart. Okay, well, we understand.
Yeah,
okay,
the
give
piece
it a hard
just
spin.
Fell onto the ground.
Okay, so it was not hard at all, and it's in the middle.
So you can choose.
I feel like we're on astrology.
Astrology.
Okay, astrology.
So the question is, astrology, helpful or not?
Do I start?
Yeah.
No, you guys start. I really know nothing about astrology.
So I love astrology. It is my jam. I'm a Pisces, but I also am a Leo rising, and I have a Pisces moon, if anyone knows what that means. Well,
so
I'm a double
it really
Pisces.
Means something
it
to
means
you.
Something to me. And not to the set. I don't go every day to say, what's my day going to be like today, stars? Uh-huh. Like, fine, I'll read like my monthly horoscope. It always says I'm going to be rich, but I'm dirt poor, so it's a fucking lie. But I do think astrology is helpful just in understanding your demeanor and why you act a certain way. I think sometimes
so you believe
for me,
the science behind it.
I do.
Okay.
Because I am very much a Pisces through and through.
I don't know what that means.
It means that we're you know, like,
what's
floaty.
Pisces again? What month is that?
March. I was born March 15th.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're like very dreamy and like, you know, emotional and whatever, all that stuff. But sometimes it just helps me understand. Like, I like to know the signs of people I'm working with, like in a team. just so I can understand like temperament, how to get along, like what our work styles are going to be like, because I do believe in that heavily. So helpful or not, I think it totally depends. For me, it's just a nice addition. I'm a very spiritual person. I love the stars. So I don't know if it's helpful, but I do enjoy it.
Would you or have you, would you date someone who is astrologically incompatible with you? Or is that a huge red flag and you won't go there?
So I, like you said earlier, love doing things that I'm not supposed to do. So if I know you're not compatible with me, I'm going to try. I'm going to try. Yeah. Actually, the person I'm dating right now is an Aries, and I don't think that Pisces and Aries. Actually, maybe we are. I'm going to have to look that up, but I'll let you know. I don't think. Okay. I don't. We'll I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. So you take it into account, but you wouldn't not do it.
Yeah. I'm not going to like rule my life because the stars are telling me to do a certain thing.
Okay. But it's just like useful information to have.
Totally. Yeah.
So if something's not working out with someone, you're like, well, they are this sign. And so I have to take this into account. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about it. And I feel like it's become more and more of the norm to be into astrology. It used to be like a fringe thing. It was very like woo woo, like only kind of hippy dippy people are into it. And now everyone's kind of into it.
Because everyone loves doing what's trendy, which is annoying. Sure. Like, you might not be into the stars, but you're like, oh, the Astro Twins are doing a gem gem study and on fucking, I don't know, in Soho. Let's all go because it's cool, right? What are you though?
Virgo. Does that feel right?
My sister's a Virgo.
Okay.
We'll talk later.
Oh, God.
No, I love...
I get the same reaction about Virgo as when I tell people I'm an only child.
Right. That's exactly what it is.
There's always this like, polite adjustment, like, oh, yeah, okay, that explains some things.
What
that's
month
cool.
is Virgo?
September?
Late August into September.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's a Virgo. Everybody's born in September.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Gemini, rising Gemini.
Ooh.
Oh, Gemini is the crazy one, right?
Yeah, you a double Gemini.
Yep.
I kind of love that. Gemini.
Can you read her now on the podcast?
You know what's funny, though? And I'm not just saying this to say this, but I was going to say that you're a Gemini, but I didn't because I feel like sometimes people get offended when you assume they're a Gemini. I don't think Gemini is a bad
thing. So what about our conversation told you that Lolita was a Gemini?
It was just a vibe. It wasn't even a conversation.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes you just look at someone. Like, I would look at you and think you were a Sagittarius.
Oh. What does that mean?
It's just my vibe.
We're going to talk about it later, we'll too. Okay.
No, but Geminis are dope.
I get along with Gemini, so yeah, I'm down.
Gia Woods.
Wait, are you supposed to get along with your same sign? Or are you supposed to be like, too much of the same thing?
I mean, it depends if you're in a romantic relationship or a friendship. Like, I tend to surround myself with Libras randomly. Like, a lot of my best friends are Libras, and my old partners have been Libras, which is weird. My sister's a Virgo. My mom's a Sag. I don't know.
So, Lolita, you don't pay attention to it too much.
I don't, but I do tend to gravitate towards where people born in, like, I think it's what you are.
Pisces?
Yeah, in April, like early April.
So no, that would be Aries. No, Aries is late
April. I think
April.
So.
It's Aquarius, Pisces, and then I think
it's either Pisces
Aries.
Or Aries. Anyway, that's what a lot of my
Aries is March 20th to April 20th.
Okay, so Aries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, go Aries.
A lot of
go
your partners Aries. Are Aries?
Yeah, I've dated my boyfriend and ex-boyfriend and a really good friend of mine are all Aries.
Yeah. Is that a thing?
They can handle a Gemini.
Another friend of mine was a Gemini and he dated two Aries also. Yeah. Same thing, 2 days apart.
Aries dated are very like strong-willed. They're very like, And Geminis are too, so you need to be able to handle a Gemini.
That's true. Who can handle me? Who handles a Virgo? I'm in search of someone who can handle
Aries,
me.
Aries typically need a Virgo sometimes.
Oh,
organized, maybe.
They need a Virgo, but who does a Virgo need?
I don't think you would like a Pisces, I'll tell you that. We're way too flaky for you.
Yeah, I can't handle
it. I know. Anyone out there who's into astrology, Jesse is single and ready
and
to mingle. And she's a Virgo, so hit us up.
Oh my God. Okay, on that note.
We're done.
All right, so you already said it, but LolitaCross.com is the place to find you. Yep. The Wing is another place to find your work or you if you happen to be there. And thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having
me. It was
awesome
having you.
Fun.
Hell yeah.
This was a lot of food for thought.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to have a lot of follow-up questions for you after I process this conversation. Yeah. So maybe
I'm definitely
going to
hit you up for a tour because I'm feeling real inspired.
Hell yeah. All right, guys, thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
As usual.
Oh, Female Gaze Pod at Female Gaze Pod on Instagram. You guys already know. We've been receiving a lot of DMs and a lot of hot topic takes. So thank you so much. Keep doing it.
We need a lot more takes, actually.
Yeah.
We're burning through them. So keep sending us those.
Yeah.
And thanks for your messages.
Yeah,
and
love you.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.